Yeah, appreciate it, Steve. Thanks so much.
All right.
Just flooded with the news today.
Yeah, flooded with news. So let's start with this. The way it ended up playing out starting the weekend of October 24th. Everyone's saying the 24th. There's going to be a game or two on the 23rd, that Friday night, because I noticed it was an October 23-24. But it's nine games in 9 weeks with the plus one at the end. What did you think of the plus one at the end?
I thought that I thought that had been floated. I remember seeing that floated earlier, maybe a couple of weeks ago, that it might be a plus one involving every team in the conference. And it's a little thing that I've seen high schools do with some postseason tournaments. I've actually seen it done locally in wrestling. Maybe they even got the idea, that's where they got the idea from. But there's a local wrestling league here in Eastern Pennsylvania that has done that, has matched up like 1 versus 1, 2 versus 2, 3 versus 3. I always thought that was like a unique format for them. I didn't know that the Big Ten was going to actually come up with that. I like that as a ninth game, instead of scheduling another crossover game, I kind of like that it feels that there's some sort of, this is like a big tournament that's going on at the end of the year. Now, there are the problems will be if they're potentially rematches, that could possibly happen. And I guess Barry Alvarez addressed that obliquely, saying, well,
he did
kind of cross that bridge when we come to it. But that is possible. I mean, you know, the possible some of those games are just going to be really not, you know, what are the players and coaches and teams really going to have invested in playing a 6 versus 6 or 7 versus 7? Maybe they will. Maybe at that point they're going out with a bang sort of thing. I kind of liked the idea a little bit as the Big Ten kind of throwing a tournament. If it gets to that point, they can maybe throw that as like a celebration tournament kind of thing at the end of December, saying, hey, we made it.
Right, they made it. But also, it also could figure in who goes to a bowl game.
Sure.
There are going to be bowl games out of this. I mean, so it's not the last game for some teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on, I haven't seen this, if it's been determined yet, if there's just going to be full-scale bowl eligibility, if we're still going to need so to have a 500 record, depending on the number of bowls that are available. Yeah,
right.
Like if you get a 4 versus 4 and the winner goes to a bowl game, that'll be something, right?
Right, exactly. So it's a different twist. I thought one of the key elements in there was in the press conference when Sandy Barber was asked about student-athlete and staff responsibility. That's a big part of this, Mark. They were doing it before, but now they're going to attempt to do it with, obviously, the campus is filled with students right now. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, one of the curious things that I had a question, and it was asked and I think kind of obliquely answered, was that the Big Ten, as part of it's like they're staging these green, they're calling it green, red, orange stages.
Yes.
Of basically eligibility, that they're going to be based on positivity rates from the team. And then it said population. Now, I was questioning, does that mean your university population? Are you going to, is that going to be drawn into the context of like whether the football team can play, whether the university population has a positive rate of green? Their population rate says it was between 0 and 3.5%. I guess now the clarification that the Ohio State physician, Dr. James Borchers, said is that the population is everybody regarding the football program. So I'm assuming that's going to mean coaches, training staff, everybody involved. That it didn't necessarily mean that it was going to be university population rates that were going to be that were going to determine eligibility, whether teams can practice or not. So that is going to be something, I think, to watch, that your whole program has, it's not just your players, that your whole program has to test below these rates. It's 5% for the team, and then it's the population rate has to be below 7.5%. So that's where Sandy Barber was coming from, I guess, in saying that, you know, we have more investment than it's just not the players anymore, with their testing. It's everybody involved in the program. Basically, everybody who steps on the field is invested in this.
Right, exactly. And that's where That comes in. It's a red, orange, green scenario, and there are numbers attached to it. The ticket part of it, people always wonder, can I go to the game? Mm-hmm. Well, tickets are not going to be sold to the games. What's your understanding on people actually being there or not?
This, I think there's still more. I think the Big Ten needs to make a little more clarification on this. Andy Barber on the press conference said that the agreement that the presidents and chancellors signed would be that they would not sell tickets. She also said that that doesn't mean that there won't be attendance, that player families will try to be accommodated.
Okay.
And then Barry Alvarez said that that includes like coaching staff families too. There might be some. What about the suites? How do the suite holders? How do they factor into this? Or, you know, way back when Penn State announced it was about a 23,000 capacity, long before this, you know, a couple days, you know, or before the cancellation or the suspension actually happened. Sandy Barber said that the suites, there was still discussion whether the suites counted as part of the, you know, the building at Beaver Stadium with regard to how many people can be in in a location in a gathering according to state rules. And then obviously Pennsylvania now with a federal judge declaring that some of the gathering rules were unconstitutional, that is another element to it. So I think the probably they're just going to go across the board and say we're not going to sell tickets, but some people, I think some people will be in the stadium, potentially even more than parents and families. I think maybe if you can get like in Pennsylvania with the 250 person rule, if you don't have 250 people, maybe they could add a few more. But I think that probably are going to be at that level, at a maximum.
Right. See, that's what's interesting about the suites that you mentioned that. Mm. It's a 250 limit outdoors, but the suites are indoors.
Right.
So, I mean, that
25
that means,
limit indoors, which now is unenforceable. So,
now I feel like I'm parsing words here.
Exactly.
They'll have to get, obviously, a ruling on that. All right. So, just the way it ended up playing out, a lot of people are euphoric in the Big Ten footprint about getting football back. What were your thoughts when they finally said yes?
It's about time.
Yeah.
I looked back, I wasn't one of the banging the drum about Big Ten communication necessarily being poor. I get it. I do understand that. I thought overall the open letter that Kevin Warren wrote, I think it was 9 days after the decision, actually was good and laid out the reasons, but there was a mistake in there, essentially, that he said that this decision will not be revisited. Well, clearly, through this process, they were revisiting their decision this whole time. I think that the fact that he said that he kind of drove a nail into the coffin 9 days later, I think that opened him up and the conference up to some additional criticism, because that seemed to be a very final statement when, in fact, they were revisiting this the whole time. They were going through the process of saying, what does testing look like now? We've heard Sandy Barber say that. I mean, she mentioned that on the radio show with you when she said, we're in a very different time now than we were in August. And, there are things that are very encouraging. And I think that was 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And so how did things change in those interim 3 weeks and then in 2 weeks since? And the Big Ten, when it made that statement, didn't leave any room open for plans changing with regard specifically to the testing. And then I think they knew at some point that if they got there, that that was one of their questions that they needed to have answered thoroughly, that they didn't need to say, we're not going to revisit this. So they could have said, until we have some of these questions answered, we are going to continue on this plan. But as always, plans can change. That was something to me that right. I thought was important with President Barron's statement today when he said, I voted to postpone in August, but things changed.
What does it say, though, that sometimes when a decision is made and there's outside criticism, sometimes people can dig in. What does it say about the Big Ten that in the end they didn't dig in, except they dug deeper to find better answers and then came up with this?
I guess that depends on your perspective, right? I mean, if you're if you are celebrating today, then you are celebrating the fact that the medical committee that Sandy Barber chaired came up with answers and came up with a model that the conference presidents could feel good about. Could feel good about playing again. If you are not celebrating today, if you are saying that this is just a money grab and the Big Ten is now no better than the SEC, and I've seen that concept floated.
I have, yes.
Yeah. Then you feel like the Big Ten is not digging into its principles, and the Big Ten is selling out its principles. So, I lean toward the former. I don't know that I don't believe that the Big Ten is selling out any sort of financial principle for this. I believe that the Big Ten has, at least has taken a look and has found a way that it can play what it believes is a safe way. And those testing protocols, they're no joke. I mean, they're pretty rigid.
Yes, they are.
A 5% positive rate among football players is not a high threshold to get to, and that's when you're going to get shut down.
Right.
And you can't practice, I think, for a week. So if you get to a ninth game, from all what we've heard about, maybe resurgence and positive cases. Mm-hmm. Positive cases. That's their bar. They're
yes.
not measuring for hospitalizations or
right.
recoveries. They're mentioning truly on positive cases. If you can keep it below 5%, I think, and you play 9 games, you've done a good job.
Yeah.
On a college campus.
Right. And I think what this does recognize is something all of us have lived the entire time. This has been an ever changing story and landscape, and part of it is. The testing they're talking about now didn't exist in June, mm-hmm. July. It was being worked on, but it didn't exist then. So you didn't have that answer back then that you have now. So because of it's been an ever-changing story on multiple levels, not just the sports level.
Yeah, and imagine when they start playing football, what will testing look like on October, that week?
Yes.
The week of October 17th to the 23rd, what will a Big Ten test look like, or anybody? So what kind of testing will the Big Ten have at that point? Giving it another month. And Barry Alvarez on a Zoom call said that one of their scheduling models had an October 17th start date, but they pushed it back. The president's pushed it back just to even have another week of preparation. And I'm not even sure that goes beyond the idea of football preparation, of just having players being ready to play. I think
right.
that's probably just another week of having them to be tested and to be sure.
Yeah, that's 21 days. I mean, it's 23 days from September 30th when they start. Mm-hmm. That's an extra week where maybe, somebody, for example, say you start testing on the 30th and somebody mm-hmm. tests positive. You're supposed to be out 21 days.
Right.
So maybe that's part of the formula. I don't know. I'm just guessing here. But that's what we do for a living. All right. Mark, thanks so much. Always appreciate your insight very much.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Steve. Thanks for having me, and hope to see you in October.